call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. We are going to kind of mix and match this agenda a little bit. We're going to take Senate Bill 453 first, and then we're going to take Senate Bill 443, followed by 452 and 302. So we will begin by opening a hearing on a public hearing on Senate Bill 453.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, it's about small school correction. For the purpose of state school fund distribution, currently a small elementary school is not a remote small elementary school for additional student wage if the school is within 8 miles of another elementary school. Furthermore, a remote small elementary school should not have changed its location since January 1st, 1995, and it should have qualified as remote small school on July 18, 1995. Now, what the bill does is it allows a small elementary school to qualify as a remote small elementary school in the state school fund distribution formula if the school is not within 8 miles of another elementary school in the same school district. That's the addition, in the same school district.
Okie dokie. We are honored by the presence of Senator Prozanski here. And Senator Prozanski, you had a couple
Superintendent Mark Finlan.
Please come up.
And Peter, why don't you come on up to the revenue?
And Senator Cruz, are you here on this bill as well?
That'll be on the next.
That will be up next. Thank you. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you very much for having us today on Senate Bill 453. 453 is a bill that I introduced at the request of the Yonkala School District. Superintendent Thillman is here. He's to my left here at the end of the dais. The scenario is this. We have currently in law, as your administrator has stated, a law that prohibits or restricts, I should say, individual school districts that have remote, what would be considered a remote elementary school, from being able to be in the formula to receive different compensation based on their geographic distance from other elementary schools. In the case of Yonkala Elementary School District, they had two elementary schools at one point. Because of the economy of size and trying to move and be much more efficient, some years ago they closed the more outlying elementary school and brought everyone into the most closer one that's actually in the city of Yonkala. So they reduced from two to one elementary school. That elementary school is in the city of Yonkala. It's in the school district of Yonkala. The adjacent school district to what would be the north-northwest of it is the North Douglas School District. They also have an elementary school, which just happens to be within 8 miles of the Yonkala Elementary School District. Two separate school districts, but because of the way the law is currently written, Yonkala is not able to reap the benefit that they would have but for this other elementary school that's in an adjacent school district being within the 8 mile geographic area. When this problem came to my attention, we looked at it and it made little sense to me, and I seriously do not believe we as a legislature or those who came before us actually intended to have that type of consequence. Because as you can see, that if any adjacent school district should make a move of their school, their elementary school, to another location, putting it within 8 miles geographic distance of an existing school district, they would technically, the second school district would lose out on the formula that they would have been benefiting. And it doesn't seem that it would be in the intent of the legislature to hold accountable one school district's decisions as to the impact it would have on an adjacent school district. So that's why the bill is before you. Superintendent Thillman is here. He will be able to give you a little bit more information as to the impact for their particular school district. I understand that you'll be hearing from other school districts. In our research, we understand there may be up to about 25 school districts that may be impacted by this legislation that would, in fact, in rural Oregon, be able to receive this extra benefit through the formula as a remote elementary school. Madam Chair.
Thank you. We'll wait till the panel talks, and then we'll open it for questions.
And I don't have too much more to add. That was well done. The impact for us.
Can you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm Mark Thielman, Superintendent Yonkala. The impact for us, it's about $100,000 and $140,000 in small remote elementary funding that we currently don't receive. And our district is about half the size it was in the mid-1980s, just by the economy and the decline of the timber industry. So we're in a situation where we have all the requirements of all of our neighboring districts, most of whom, that for example, Elkton would be our closest, that do receive this funding. So we're kind of in competition. We're at a disadvantage just due to the, I don't know if accident's the best word, of just, you know, decisions that were made in the 1970s and 80s to merge those elementary schools that eventually landed us outside of the scope of the funding formula.
Malcolm.
Senator Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Peter Tarzian. I'm superintendent of Falls City School District. Falls City is west of here. West of Dallas, Oregon, about 10 miles. I do have written testimony. I think it was handed out in front of you. I won't go through it in word by word, but I would say that we're a school district of right now about 145 students. We're a K-12 district. We have a high school, one building in a separate location from the elementary building. The high school is 912. Grades 9-12, and the elementary is K-8. My support of this legislation actually takes a little different tact. The last session, the legislature actually had both the elementary correction update and the high school correction update as a part of legislation. What happened in the process of that session was, as the bill moved through and got amended to a number of different other bills, if the elementary was finally stripped out of the legislation, and the only updating of the statute was, in fact, for the high schools. And Falls City School District's position is that we recognize that the legislature, in fact, did recognize that updating would be necessary for small districts and small remote schools. Most of them have sustained continued declining enrollment, which of course reduces their revenue and their ability to deliver quality education to their students. And we would simply ask, as Falls City School District, that the legislature, in a sense, finish the job and update the small elementary schools as well as the high schools that they did in 2009.
Okay,
I'm
thank
open
you.
For questions.
Mr. Tarzian, what was the rationale for taking out the elementary schools last time?
Probably the same that exists now, Senator Burdick, and that is money.
Okay. I had a funny feeling that might be the
case. Yeah, that's probably right.
The other question I had for Senator Przanski and Mr. Thielman is, it's in a rural area like that, it's kind of surprising to me that you would find two districts with schools that close. Has there ever been discussion of consolidating the districts themselves?
There's been a couple of attempts, but culture, the barrier there is that there's a fur trade era cultural differences between the two towns, and that's one of the reasons why they were settled so close to each other. And that's in a nutshell, and it still exists today.
Tell me about this fur trade culture.
Well, the Applegates versus Charles Drain, who founded the town of Drain where North Douglas is, and they didn't get along. I don't want to waste your time with a long history lecture, but
I think I'd like to pursue that. Maybe I can pursue that with Senator Przanski.
Madam Chair, one of the things that has been told to me, because there has been discussions not only with these two school districts, but another adjacent school district that Mark has mentioned, which is the Yonkala, to some type of a merger. And the way, if you're ever going to see that happen, one of the rules would have to be you cannot take the mascot of either one of those schools. You have to come up with a new one, because I think that might be part of it.
Senator Haas.
Thank you. So there's about 25 schools that would this would help. They would have that status. So the way that they would now then get more money under the formula. So if unless there's more money into the school budget, then that would come at the expense of the all of the rest of the schools in the state. And that's the problem, right?
The majority of schools. Since those, I mean, those are few, have little of any representation. That's why we're before you today to see if we can't equalize out for the little schools. And in this case, the remote small elementary schools.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
If I could just add a comment kind of related to Senator Hass's comment and question. The statute, the way that it was written in 1995, was somewhat either clumsy or intentional in terms of the way they set up the words contiguous school. Because I think the idea was that if you don't have enough money to operate in 1995, then you ought to consolidate. And of course, if you recall, that was the period of time when there was consolidation. And there are a lot of people that I think are both discussing and working on different ways in which to approach this consolidation issue. We're here before you today, I would suggest, almost as a stopgap measure, because right now what you have is elementary children in certain schools, in certain school districts that aren't getting the same equitable access to the formula as others are. And I would suggest that, you know, consolidation is a longer range discussion, but this definitely would help our elementary schools.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Our next witnesses are Kara Olmo and Dan Huber-Kantoler. I hope I didn't murder your name too badly.
You did well.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Burdick and members of the committees, my name is Kara Olmo, and I live in Grants Pass, Oregon, and I'm a business owner, parent, and trustee of the Three River Schools Foundation, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 453. We have a very similar situation in the Applegate Valley, which is a part of the Three Rivers School District in Southern Oregon, where we have a small school, elementary K through 8, that is not currently receiving the small school, remote school funding due to the presence of the closest school is 7.5 miles away from it, but is a part of the Medford School District and managed by the Medford School District rather than the Three Rivers School District. And we're here today to talk about what the funding would do for the Applegate School if it were to be included. I have with me, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Dan Huber-Kantoler, and I'm the superintendent at Three Rivers School District.
Okay. And as we've identified, of course, the problems with small schools and the lack of funding in our rural areas, we started, rather than just holding the district, blaming the district and going to the district meetings when there was threat of school closure, we formed the Three Rivers Schools Foundation and Friends of the Applegate School to work with the district to see what we could do to ensure that our small schools stay open. And in 2009, we saw the Three Rivers School District go through a school closure with Wolf Creek Elementary, which was a school in the district that had a very similar situation and was receiving a very, very small amount of the weighted funding due to a school in a neighboring district. Dan, will you explain the situation that happened at Wolf Creek, please?
Yeah, Wolf Creek was a very small school of about 66 students. It did receive some remote small school funding because, like Yoncalla, it had a neighboring district, Glendale Elementary School, that had a school 8-point-some miles away, so it received a very small amount of remote school funding. The cost just became so prohibitive to operating the small school that the district board voted to close the school. We came to a session ago in a similar bill, and Wolf Creek came and asked for support of something similar to this, knowing that extra revenue would have kept their school open. They have become a charter school, and the district did sponsor the charter school. And so there is a school in Wolf Creek, but very different than our Three Rivers School District.
Thank you. Cycle Oregon went through Wolf Creek a few years ago, and I'm trying to remember whether we stayed, whether we camped in that schoolyard.
I think so. I know we had a group of people that helped with Cycle Oregon. So if you've been through there, it'd be hard to say it's not remote.
It's very remote, and it's very remote and very beautiful.
Yes.
Well, and it's one of, so Wolf Creek Elementary is a part of the Three River School District, as are our schools in the Illinois Valley of Josephine County, as are some of our schools in Jackson County in the Applegate Valley. So the Three Rivers School District deals with a wide variety of issues that span a large geographic area. And one of the reasons we got involved from the Applegate School, the Applegate Valley and the Applegate School with Three Rivers School District and paying so much attention to Wolf Creek is the Applegate Valley is both Jackson and Josephine County. We are schools in both the Medford School District and the Three Rivers School District on either side. And we have a very strong growing economy. And the economy in the Applegate Valley is growing mainly due to the growth of the wine industry. In addition to being a trustee for the Three Rivers Schools Foundation, I do own a vineyard and winery in the Applegate Valley. And when my husband and I relocated to Oregon from California almost 10 years ago now, we had every intention of starting the small family and vineyard that we now own and raising our family in the state of Oregon. Had we not had a local, good, high-quality public school in our area, I don't know that we would have moved to Oregon. I mean, I don't know that we could have. I mean, we can't afford private education, and I certainly don't have the time to try to take my children into town to receive their education, and I don't want them to be educated outside of where we live and where our neighbors are and where our community is centered around. And so when we moved here in 2002, we were the second tasting room, winery with a tasting room, and all of the Applegate Valley. The Applegate Valley runs north-south, just about 20 miles west of Medford, Grants Pass area. We were the second tasting room that was open on a regular basis that was looking to draw tourists and tourism to the area to sell our agricultural product. And that was in 2003 that we opened the tasting room, and this summer we'll have 20. So it's a huge impact in our region, and we have people moving every year, maybe every month right now, young students, graduates from UC Davis and Fresno, looking to farm, looking to buy property, looking to start families, looking not only just for the wine business, but also we have creameries, we have a microbrewery that's trying to figure out how to start on EFU land. We have co-ops and CSAs that are forming throughout the Applegate Valley. And when I moved in 2002, I had numerous conversations with interested people and active people in the Applegate Valley about what was the future and what did they see and what did our county commissioners see for our region. And easily, 7 times out of 10, the answer was it's destined to be a bedroom community for Medford and Grants Pass. And that is not the case today. We have a very strong growing agricultural commodity industry, and our economic development corporation, Soretti, regularly we work with bringing tours through and using our wine industry and wine area to celebrate and bring additional businesses even to our urban centers. But without a school, I'm not sure.
Okay, and what's the name of your winery?
Wooldridge Creek Vineyard and Winery.
Great.
Thank you.
Try some.
Always take the plug.
Are there any other questions from the committee?
Could I answer a couple of the questions that you asked earlier?
Oh, absolutely.
If that's a possibility. Very briefly, how's that? Okay. You asked about why don't they consolidate, and Three Rivers is right next door to Medford School District. Couple of reasons. One, while the schools may be slightly less than 7 miles apart, where the kids come from is not 7 miles apart. For instance, kids that go to Applegate Elementary School come from miles and miles away, where they're riding a bus for 40 minutes one way to get to Applegate School. On the other side of the line, there are kids that go to Rouge Elementary School that are riding from 40 minutes the opposite way to get to Rouge Elementary School. So then you add another bus ride from the school that they were at to the neighboring school. And then it gets worse when they get older. For instance, if we were to consolidate Applegate into Rouge, the students that live currently in my district would not only incur the 40-minute bus ride to get to Applegate, another 15-minute bus ride to get to Rouge, but then they'd drive on that back road, beautiful drive, but not if you're a high school kid trying to get to South Medford High School. And so that's one of the reasons why the schools don't consolidate. It's just too far for the kids to transport. Financially, you asked a good question. There's no more money. And thank you all. This is a thankless job that I know you're doing, especially this session. If my math is anywhere near correct, with 25 schools, you're talking somewhere between $140,000 to $250,000 per school. With 25 schools, you're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million a year, $10 million over the biennium in a 5.56 so far recommended budget. I believe that's less than one-half of a percent of a shift in the funding to schools.
Thank you. Okay, that's all the witnesses I have signed up. Is there anybody else who wanted to speak on this?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hass.
I would like to nominate Senator Pozanski to try and mediate this feud between the drains and the
I know he would do a superlative job. Get ready to become friends. All right. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 453. And open a public hearing on Senate Bill 443. And Senator Cruz, did you want to join Senator Pozanski at the podium?
Madam Chair, if it's all right, we'd like to have Dave Barrows also join us since he has a historical perspective.
Oh, okay. Yeah, anybody, you're in charge, Senator Pozanski.
Well, can we move to a work session then?
Oh, if only we were posted. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Floyd Pozanski, State Senator, District 4, represents parts of Lane and Douglas counties. Senate Bill 443 is before you because we're asking the committee to act favorably and removing a sunset clause that was placed on the bill when it was originally passed. Back, I believe it was in, if I'm not mistaken, it was 2007. Representative Susan Morgan was representing a vast section of Douglas County. She approached me and we talked about the issues as to how we can actually allow for road funds that are coming in from the federal system to be used not only for the road maintenance but also the highway protection and public safety on these roads. And with her direction, we moved forward, and the legislature did in fact pass the bill that's basically is now law, and we're asking for the sunset to be removed. Basically, what we're asking at this point, by removing the sunset, of course, it will make it more permanent. It will, in fact, allow for, at this point, Douglas County and Lane County to continue to do what they've been doing over the since its enactment back in 2007, to continue and proceed with the use of those road funds. Now, the three of us that are up here, we've asked Dave Burrows to join us because of his historical perspective on the ONC lands and how the, let's say, historically how the counties have been funded and how this played out and how it has played out here in the state. You do have, I believe, on your list of other witnesses, the new sheriff, Tom Turner, for Lane County. Tom is going to be able to provide you on the ground, this experience of how this has actually worked out. The last thing I'd like to, before I pass this off to Senator Cruz, is that we understand that there are other counties that may be interested in joining and having this option. We know that when we first had the bill back in 2007, there was some, uncertainty in some counties as to how that might actually be utilized within their specific counties. I will say for one of the drafters of the bill or sponsors of the bill, we have no objection for other counties who may want to be included in this opportunity to utilize some of their road funds from the ONC timber revenue, which is actually now more the bailout safety net money. to be used for enforcing public safety and on traffic issues on those roads.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Senator Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1. For the record, I have submitted a letter from the Douglas County Board of Commissioners as well as the Douglas County Sheriff in support of this legislation. Senator Brzezinski pretty much laid it all out. The law is set to repeal in 2014. We're asking to remove the sunset now so there's a level of certainty moving forward for these two counties. I would submit, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that this is working very well in Lane and Douglas counties. Senator Brzezinski mentioned other counties are considering it. What we're finding in those other counties, because one of them is a county I represent, that the sentiment in the community is somewhat contentious on the issue. And I think it's important for a community to support this. I would also point out that part of the logic behind this is we have so many county roads that are surrounded on both sides by federal land, and so we are being asked to patrol federal land to a large degree. Quite honestly, for our counties to be able to have public safety 24/7, this is a necessary piece of it. All we're asking is to remove a sunset on a program that is working very well.
What year again was it put
2007.
In? 2007.
Yep. Okay. And Madam Chair, I should identify Dave Burrows as our lifeline for any issues.
Mr. Burrows, do you have anything to add to that?
Three people are going to drown right before your eyes, Madam Chair.
Those three.
I would like just to add a sentence. I will. Dave Burrows, I'm here today, actually. This is a pro bono appearance for Douglas County. I do represent the Association of O&C Counties, but the funds that we're talking about here are basically Forest Service funds. The National Forest Service Act says that this 25% of the receipts will come back to the states that from whence they came, where the in the old days where the trees were cut, now where the formula has them under secure schools and federal legislation, which may end next year, and that will be another whole series of stories. But in this case, the federal act says that the state legislature in each of the states that have national forest lands will decide how to divide them between roads and schools. This legislature, for the 57 years that I've been in this building, the division has always been 25% of that 25% would go to schools, 75% would go to the road funds. What has occurred in a number of counties is they have ample road fund money, more than they need actually to continue to maintain their roads, but it's locked in, has been locked in until 2007, and they don't have enough money to run the county. So one of the things in trying to unsilo, you know, we have the silos, and we're trying to break this silo down, and the legislature agreed in 2007 so that the road fund money could be used not just for putting asphalt down or gravel or whatever, but could also be used for patrolling. And the ask of this committee, as both senators have indicated, is just, if you could eliminate the sunset, this has no fiscal impact on the state whatsoever. Whether you do act on this bill or don't act on this bill makes no difference to the state's general fund in any way. These are all federal monies. And so it just gives the counties involved an opportunity to plan and budget what may be very, very limited funds going forward if the secure schools is not reauthorized by Congress. Thank you.
Thank you. That was good background. And so this wouldn't change the proportion of money that's going to schools. It would only take the chunk.
Madam Chair, if I could add a couple things. We did get a legal opinion or an opinion on the legality of this, and it is legal. And if the committee would like it, I'll get it. It's in one of the stacks on the table next to my desk in my office. I didn't have time quite to find it before coming down here. But we do have that. So everything we're doing is above board and the way it should be. And the other thing I would say is for Mr. Barrows, this being pro bono, it's not quite true because about 3 years ago, he happened to be down in Douglas County at the time of the Douglas County Fair, and he was my guest at the Loverboy concert, so he did owe us a little something. So.
And Madam Chair, if you don't think that was a labor of love.
All right, we will make this hearing serious now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Brzezinski.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I have other obligations if I can be excused from the hearing.
Okay, any parting shots for Senator Brzezinski before he let him off the hook? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thomas Turner. Welcome.
Okay, hi. How are you? Chair Burdick and members of the committee, my name is Tom Turner. I'm the sheriff of Lane County. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. So I'm here to ask for support for Senate Bill 443, as they have just already talked about. This bill eliminates the sunset provision that allows the Forest Reserve monies in Lane and Douglas County to be used for law enforcement purposes. Many of you are familiar with Lane County's fiscal challenges that we're facing. Lane County is facing a $6 to $7 million shortfall the next fiscal year. If you add the road fund money back to that, it's even more. So you're in the $8 to $9 million range. Secure Rural Schools funding ends next fiscal year. After that, there will be unprecedented reductions in all of our county services. The mission of my agency is to make Lane County a safer place to live by protecting the lives and property of all of its residents. This is becoming more challenging. Lane County has a population of about 330,000. 90,000 of those residents are in unincorporated Lane County, and those are the ones where we, Lane County Sheriff's Office, are the first responders to those people. Lane County is about 4,700 square miles. Over 50% of that is federal land. There are over 2,600 miles of state highways, county roads, and streets. Lane County citizens appreciate the network of roads constructed and maintained throughout this large area. But the roads require a law enforcement presence in order to keep them safe for all the motorists. The Sheriff's Department has the task of patrolling the roads outside the urbanized areas. We're able to maintain law enforcement patrol on these roads due to forest-related road funds that support this service. The funding is critical to our ability to maintain a patrol function. In 2009, there were over 3,100 crashes in Lane County. This includes 31 fatal crashes. These crashes resulted in the deaths of 40 people. Excessive speed is the primary cause of these crashes, and a visible law enforcement presence promotes and enforces driving behaviors to make these roads safe for all drivers. In recent years, the Sheriff's Office has been hit hard by budget cuts. In 2008, budget reductions forced the elimination of 26% of our staff, which equates to 94 full-time employees. This year, additional reductions are going to be necessary. Currently, forest-related fund transfers allowed by this legislation are the primary revenue source to support our traffic patrol deputies. In coming years, it is possible that these funds will compromise the only revenue support for traffic enforcement on county roads. Senate Bill 443 eliminates the sunset provision in legislation that provides my department access to the critically needed revenue that helps us uphold our duty to the citizens of Lane County to protect their lives and property. Please support Senate Bill 443 and send the bill to the Senate with a due pass recommendation. I provided you with some written documentation earlier also, and thank you again for providing me the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you very much. You're coming in early for a sunset. In other words, there's more time to come in for an extension.
That's correct.
Removal of the sunset. What would be the impact if the sunset were simply extended rather than eliminated altogether?
kind of a slower death.
Okay, well, that's direct enough. Okay.
I understand.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You very much.
All right. That's all I have signed up. Is there anybody else who wanted to talk on this? Okay. We will close the hearing on Senate Bill 443 and consider bringing it back before the committee. Now, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 452. Christine.
Thank you, Chair Bardick, members of the committee. Senate Bill 452 modifies the provisions by which counties or cities handle the appeals of a decision of a hearings officer or other decision-making authority. It changes the fees that counties or cities may charge to hear these appeals. The measure would establish a fee at the lesser of 10% of the original application fee, or $1,000. And it changes the cost a city or county may charge to provide a transcript of the hearings. If the transcript cost is less than $500, the fee is limited to the actual cost of the transcript. Or if it's more than $500, the fee would be $500. Furthermore, this measure would prohibit counties or cities from charging fees to move the appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals, and also requires the transcript fees and appeals fees are refunded in cases where the county or city declines to review the decisions of a hearings officer or other decision-making authority and chooses to pass the appeal directly through to the Land Use Board of Appeals instead.
Okay, we have signed up on this, Pat Sherman and Jonathan Menton.
I'll sit next to you.
Great.
Welcome.
Do you want to go first? It's up to you.
Okay. Chair Burdick and members of the committee, my name is Pat Sherman. I live in Roseburg. Thanks for holding a hearing on this bill. I've lived in Oregon since 1975, in Roseburg, Corvallis, Canby, Brookings, and now again in Roseburg. When I lived in Brookings, I served as mayor for over 3 years, and during my term as mayor, the city of Brookings increased fees for land use applications so that the fees would cover costs. When we approved the increases, however, we made one exception to the cost recovery model. And what we did was we kept the fee for appeals to the city council at $250, which we thought was enough to deter frivolous appeals and low enough to allow citizen participation. That was in 2006. I resigned as mayor in 2008. And in 2009, the city of Brookings, and this is as an example, raised its appeal fees to a prohibitive level by making the appeal fee equal to the initial application fee. And just some examples. An appeal for a detailed development plan, which is their version of a phased development, $7,128. A major partition, $3,000. Conditional use permit, $2,545. Minor partition, $1,960. Planned unit development, $4,200. A variance, $2,385. And in addition to this, if the costs of the actual hearing exceed this, then they will bill the appellant for the additional costs. So, you know, just using this as one unfortunate example of what current state law allows. And in addition to that, you know, compounding this whole problem of high fees is there's a complete lack of standards. For example, one planner may take an hour to perform a task. Another planner may take 3 hours to perform a task. One city attorney may charge $120 an hour. Another attorney may charge $390 an hour. And so simply put, the local government has a free hand to run up its costs to an unlimited amount and send a bill to the applicant. To my mind, this is not only abusive, but also contrary to Goal 1 of our land use law. By charging excessive fees like this, local governments can effectively shut down the appeal process for all but the wealthy. And I think the excessive fees, they don't only hurt only the ordinary citizens, but also the developers. Some developers can afford high fees, but I think most of our developers are small local businesses. And I read a recent Lubick case. It was Alan Montgomery versus City of Dune City, in which the city charged the developer about $22,000 for his appeal to the city council. This outrageous bill was in spite of the fact that the applicant won when he appealed to Luba, and he also prevailed when the city appealed Luba's remand to the Court of Appeals. For sure, Senate Bill 452 might cause some foregone revenue for local governments. But when one considers that the actual number of appeals in a given year is, what, maybe two or three, and that this is only one fee among many, I think the loss would be minor. And in addition to that, I think if one balances the foregone revenue with the idea of making our land use process accessible to citizens and to the notion of promoting trust in government, I think the bill is a win for local governments also. They may disagree. In summary, I think Senate Bill 452 is a reasonable bill, limited in scope, which promotes good governments, and I urge you to approve it or pass it on to the next committee or whatever else you do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jonathan.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jonathan Manton. Thank you so very much for having this hearing today. I'm testifying on behalf of Central Oregon Land Watch. And I wanted to just kind of share with you a quick story about a hearing that happened over in the House a few weeks ago, just to kind of make the point about how important citizen access and citizen participation is. There was a hearing dealing with land use issues a few weeks ago, and there was a few people afterward that did not get to participate in that hearing. And there was a young woman who was just exasperated after the hearing because she didn't get a chance to testify. And it was she just didn't get a chance to make her case. And it had nothing to do with a fee in this instance. It was just a matter of, you know, time limitation. But she was so upset after the hearing. She was crying, and she left saying that she was never going to do this again. Never would she take the time to come down and participate in state government again, because she didn't get a chance to have her say and didn't have a chance to have her hearing. And it was just one of those things I was thinking last night in preparing for the testimony today. It was like, wow, that really drove home the point of what citizen participation means. And in the context of this bill, what's being happened is a similar result, where folks are not allowed to participate in land use decisions counter to Goal 1 because, in some very limited instances, these fees have become excessive. And so the way the process works when you go, I'll tell you a little bit more about the county, since Pat was nice to talk about cities. So the first step, in the land use process, of course, you go to the county, and submit your land use application, whether you want to produce a development or whatever your land use application might be. And the ORS provisions currently limit the amount of that application when it goes to its first hearing for a planning commission or a hearings officer. Current law says that the charge for that hearing's maximum is $250, and that site is ORS 215-416-11B. It says the maximum fee for initial hearing shall be the cost of the local government of preparing for conducting the appeal, or $250, whichever is less. But to appeal that decision from the Planning Commission to the full Board of County Commissioners, that's where the loophole exists now. There is no statutory limit for what a county can charge at that level. So I want to draw your attention to the handout that's in your testimony. It's this little Excel spreadsheet. It's not the prettiest document in the world. But I called each and every county throughout the state and spoke to their planning departments and asked them what the fee is for that appeal fee up to the full board of county commissioner in their county. And you'll see that the contrast is stark. In most counties, it's between $250, another $300, you know, $400, some are $500, $600, $700. But in a very handful of what, you know, I would say just, you know, counties have going rogue, they have, you know, $6,000 for the appeal fee up to the full board of county commissioners, or $4,000 or $5,000. So because there's no limit currently within this law, there are a few counties that are charging just exorbitant fees. And if you're trying to appeal whichever side you're on, it doesn't matter whether you're trying to stop a development in this case or go forward with one, you know, and both sides are having to pay these exorbitant fees in these small number of cases.
And Jonathan, so, yes. Just to interrupt you for a second, so these fees, I think I have the right chart. It says that Jefferson County is, where are we? Where Jefferson? Oh, there it goes, $7,425.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's correct.
So you're saying both the person who appeals and the person on the other side have to pay this fee?
I'll have to check, but that's the, I think it's the appellant, whoever's lost at the lower level,
yeah,
will have to pay that fee.
That would be the case. Right, but you have $7,425 for Jefferson County and $200 for Malheur County.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, I've got the right chart then.
Yeah, so it was interesting as we were going through this that it's not like a valley versus not the valley kind of dynamic. You know, the kind of what I'm calling the counties that are charging really exorbitant fees, it kind of spans. It's only a handful. But there are many counties in eastern Oregon that are charging, you know, 250 or 200, and there's just a few that are charging in the thousands.
I see Multnomah and Washington are both charging 250.
Madam Chair, that's correct. Okay. And then just for sake of reference, once to appeal that level, from once it goes from the county commission to LUBA, LUBA charges a $400 appeal fee.
So LUBA, so those are set in statute?
I'm not sure if the LUBA one is set in statute or not. I don't have it in front of me, but that's currently the fee that LUBA charges.
If you could help us understand that, that would be helpful. If LUBA charges $400 for all appeals, I would suspect, well, who knows.
Yes, Madam Chair, it's a filing fee. And so like the filing fee is limited to $250 at the first stage, unlimited before the county commission, and then it's $400 at LUBA. So that's the loophole that we're trying to address.
The only issues that we're finding are from the planning commission to the city council, that appeal, and from the county planning commission or the county permitting agency to the county commission. So that's where the problem is?
I couldn't speak for all cities. I mean, some of the bigger cities do things differently. Mm-hmm. They have different ways of setting up their planning process. I don't know how they work. The smaller cities, I think it's generally planning commission to city council.
Okay.
Senator Morris. He's the only one that has a copy of that.
It should be in your stack of stuff that came with your measure history.
It's stapled to something else. I think it's in that packet, Frank.
Yeah, it's here. I'm going to loan you mine. I will peek over Senator Hass's.
You missed it in one.
There you go. It's kind of a extraordinary document. Okay, so basically that's the level. Once you're below LUBA, or once you're below the county level or the city level, you're not seeing a problem. And when you get to LUBA, you're not seeing a problem.
Okay. Madam Chair, that's my understanding, yes. The level we're trying to address with this particular bill is to try to create some uniformity and some certainty for everyone involved, which I think would be good for developers as well as, you know, neighborhood associations in this kind of, just use an example. So there would be some certainty, so you would know what that appeal fee would be across the state.
Point of clarification on that. But the chart is just counties, but we're also talking about cities. Right. But the question would be, were you unable to get the information like this from cities?
Senator Telfer and Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would love to see that information from the cities. I have not gotten it yet. I don't think I've asked specifically for that. I didn't have time to contact each and every city. But that is exactly the same level that this bill would address on in the city context, going from the city planning department or hearings officer to the city council. And that's, I think, where the fees that Pat was speaking of in the instance of Brookings, where the city council has exorbitant fees at that level of appeal.
Well, and also, when we had done it originally, that was the one exception we made to doing the cost recovery was the appeal fee. And it really did have to do with access to government.
Okay.
Then
so,
they changed
so
it.
So you had that, and then after you left as mayor, they changed it. And what did you say the fee is now?
Well, it depends. It's equal to whatever the original application fee was. So, for example, in the detailed development plan, which is their version of the phased development, $7,128 up front
to appeal
to hear an appeal. Nobody can afford that.
Okay. Thank you. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Stick
thank
around.
You.
We may drag you back.
Sure.
Okay. We have
yes.
Erica Hagedorn, Art Schleck, and Linda Ludwig. All right, why don't you start first since we have this county information in front of us. We are dying of curiosity here.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm here to speak to you today about Senate Bill 452. Senate Bill 452 raises an interesting issue, and that has to do with fees that local government can charge for land use applications and the appeal of land use applications at this point. The statutes currently that guide counties at this point, and I'll, because Linda's here, I won't use local government at this point, but basically the thrust of those statutes is the principle that fees can be charged either for the actual cost or the average actual cost of the review of the land use application at this point. That's the principle. It's a principle you find here in the statute that's proposed to be amended. Given that principle, I would submit to you that for many years, counties subsidized application fees to make sure that they were at a level that applicants could afford in terms of making an land use application. Unfortunately, over time, the ability of counties to subsidize permit fees became a problem and an issue. And so more and more counties over the years have moved to the threshold of either the actual fee or the actual costs or the average actual cost that's in that principle at this point. And I was a land use planner for a number of years in a couple of different counties and can attest to that. The county general fund was the provided the additional fee or the additional revenue to process application, and the thought was is that there was that the whole process benefited the community as a whole as well as the applicant and the interested parties at this point. Given the cuts that we have seen in local government revenue in a general fund over the last, I'll say, 10 years, you've seen fees based on costs at this point. Planning departments, many of them at this point at the county level, are operating entirely based on the fees and without any general fund subsidies at this point because, you know, the question is where do you put that general fund money? Do you put it in the county sheriff, or do you put it in human services, or do you put it in the county planning department? And the county planning department, I would submit to you, has, you know, gotten the short straw over the years. And so you've seen the fees increased to try and keep at least a reasonable level of staff to process applications and provide those services. Some counties have experienced 30 and 40% reduction in their staffing level within the last 6 years due to the budget cuts that counties have been faced with. All of that is kind of background to submit to you that the current requirement in terms of the actual cost or average actual cost is working at this point. The counties have to go through a fee schedule process, and it's a public hearing process that provides an opportunity for interested parties to attend those hearings and to question, fees and whether they are based on either the actual or average actual basis. So there is a check and balance there. The counties just don't do the fee schedule and say, here it is. And so the other thing I would like to just mention to you at this point is that it's not necessarily one size fits all in terms of fees and appeals. There is at least one county that I can, and it's an urban county at this point up in the metro area, that basically has taken the position that in terms of land use applications, that those land use applications are either reviewed at the local, administratively, or reviewed by a hearings officer. And they are final at that point. And so if somebody wants to appeal from that level, they go directly to directly to LUBA at this point. So they've taken both the Planning Commission and also the Board of County Commissioners in that county out of a lot of the quasi-judicial land use applications at this point. Some counties at this point continue to provide an opportunity to appeal from an administrative decision to either a planning commission or to the elected official. Recognize that the first appeal is $250. It's when you get into the second or potentially third appeal that the appeal fees go up at this point. So there is an opportunity for a party to appeal at, shall we say, a reasonable appeal fee of the $250 at this point.
Can you clarify that for me? What is the $250? What does that cover? Is that in statute?
That was referred to in your earlier testimony, that the first appeal of an administrative decision or of a hearings officer, let's say to a planning commission, if they're the next body in terms of the review, that appeal is $250. If you go from a hearings officer to a planning commission, then to the elected officials, then it is, then it becomes a graduated appeal fee. That's where the larger appeal fees are. And those are based, again, on staff time, legal fee, the legal implications from the county council's office, and some of those will vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So it's very difficult to have one size fits all. In closing, Chair Burdick, I would just submit to you that having either 10% of the initial fee, so if you had $250, the appeal fee would be $25. My parking ticket in the city of Portland is more than $25 at this point. That will really put a strain on local government, on counties and their general fund at this point. The other alternative, they'll have to rethink it and say, okay, you can't get an appeal to the governing body. You're going to have to go to court and go to LUBA. So I would, on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties, urge you not to support House Bill 452. Thank you.
That's Senate Bill.
Excuse me.
Jefferson County charges, according to this document, $7,425 for an appeal. That is one pretty well-paid person working full-time for a month. That's what that would cost. How do you get a fee like that?
It's called the notorious bill, Madam Chair.
Called what?
It's called the notorious bill.
Chair Burdick, and I have not seen the document that you received in terms of the appeal fees at this point, but I'll be happy to contact the 36 counties to get their appeal fees at this point, and I would just speculate at this point, and I don't want to, don't hold me to it, but the appeal fees will vary, and the highest appeal fee might be $7,000, and it might be for a destination resort.
Right.
Okay?
No, that I
can't. But there are other appeals that will be substantially less than that for other types of land use applications. So,
but if you say that the fee can be set on the actual cost or the average of actual cost, then don't you have the little guy subsidizing the appeal fees of the bigger projects? If you do the average?
Chair Burdick, yes, if you do the average, there is some, shall we say, you could say the bigger than the little one. If I have 100 applications, some of them are going to be more complex than others, okay? And so that's where the average comes in, because you can do an analysis of the time spent by your staff reviewing a conditional use permit. Some of them are fairly simple. Some of them are very complex. And so you kind of take all of that and put it into the blender and come up with the average at this point. So, you know, I would concur that there, you know, when you look at averages, there is a blending. But if we went to actual costs, then you'd wind up, as some counties I believe have, is that you have a minimum fee, and then what you do is then you charge based on the hours that are incurred in that appeal by the relevant people at this point, and then they go ahead, and if additional money is due, then the appellant would be required to pay the addition. If it's less, then it could be returned at this point. But that's also a little difficult to deal with at this point. And I don't think very few have gone to that level of trying to establish the appeal fees.
Okay. Yeah, I would like to see some data from.
I'd be happy to get that for you in the committee.
From the counties on broken down, because I neglected to ask Jonathan when he was here whether these were one particular application on these counties or whether this was some kind of standard fee.
Yes.
But I would like to find out, however it makes sense, either a range of fees or a standard fee. You know, I'd like to get that from your point of view.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Madam Chair, when this panel is done, perhaps we bring Jonathan forward to explain what those numbers are.
You will. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Erica Hagedorn here today on behalf of Deschutes County. Mr. Slack covered most of our points. Deschutes County's planning director, Nick Lelak, felt passionately about this bill, so he wanted us to come forward today with our concerns. Deschutes County's fees are designed to be based on the actual cost of service. And as you can see in our written testimony, they require a deposit of $2,490 plus 20% of the underlying application. So as Mr. Slack discussed, there are different levels of fees charged for different applications. So the 20% that they charge for a certain fee will be larger, obviously, on a destination resort and smaller on different sorts of land use applications. The folks at Deschutes County felt that if these appeals fees are limited at $1,000, the general fund and the taxpayers of Deschutes County would end up subsidizing these appeals, or they would have to ask the applicants to increase their fees to subsidize what's being lost from the cap on these particular fees. It should also be noted that Deschutes County, if an appeal doesn't move forward, refunds 75% of the money that was put down by the appellant.
What do you mean if the appeal doesn't move forward?
If the Board of Commissioners refuses to hear the appeal after the first step that Mr. Slack talked about, if they refuse to hear the appeal, 75% of their money goes back that they put down.
So a person could pay $2,000 plus 20% of their application fee, which is a fairly substantial amount of money, and then only get 75% of it back for absolutely nothing?
I think, Madam Chair, part of the review would be the staff determining and making a recommendation on that particular appeal for the Board of Commissioners. So there is work involved, as I understand.
All right. Questions? Previous witness? Thank you.
Hi. Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. I just want to thank my Mr. Schlack from AOC for providing you some baseline information. We don't have any city numbers here, so I want to let you know that cities do charge appeal fees in a manner that's appropriately reflective of their local circumstances, with different implications in a small jurisdiction versus a large city. Some cities don't charge at all. Some have waiver provisions for hearing officer decisions. Some have waiver provisions for appeals to council. Some have a small set fee. Some charge for actual time or materials. Some charge a fee that is representative of the percentage of the original land use application. And some require, as you heard from Erica, a deposit in lieu of a fee or in addition to. I think Mr. Schlack made some very good points. As you're well aware, local government general fund revenues are proportionately fairly small right now and have been for a period of time. We've seen historically in city planning departments a lot of subsidization of fees with backfilling with general fund revenues in the initial development application, that has been the case, as well as in appeals fees. Cities make their determination on their appeals fees on an annual basis, as they do all of their fees, and set them and adopt them into a fee schedule. We believe that the processing of land use matters and their appeals needs to be fair and equitable, and that cities can reflect that best at the local level. The bill calls for a shift to an appeals fee standard, as you know, that would not exceed 10% of the original application fee, or $1,000, whichever is less, which we believe would inevitably have the result of jurisdictions actually increasing their land use application fees because of this subsidization that we've seen very prevalent over the course of the last 3, 4, 5 years, depending which region of the state you're in. And we're concerned that that would chill economic recovery in our state, frankly. Cities provide 80% of the jobs in the state are within city jurisdictions, which provide over 80% of the state's local income tax revenues. I think there is a direct correlation to the thought of fees and the lack of general fund subsidization that we would see occur if this bill were to pass. We do oppose the passage of the bill, as it would change that funding balance, take it out of the hands of local decision makers, and likely cause some larger fiscal deficits in our budgets, which are very, very concerning at this point in time. There was some talk about the LUBA fee of $400, and let me give you a little bit of historical background with that. If you followed the LUBA budget discussions this session, you would have heard the concern that that fee does not begin to cover the costs of those appeals for the department. They, too, experience the general fund subsidization that local governments have been experiencing now for a while. That fee was not very long ago raised from a $200 mark to a $400 mark to begin to recognize that fact. But holding the LUBA fee up as a standard that represents actual cost recovery is not accurate. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Okay, thank you. And again, I'll invite you to do the same thing, to give us some data from cities to help us understand how various cities do it. Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on that data that you get, a little background, I spent 6 years on the Bend City Council. We had brought forward to, you can imagine, the amount of appeals we had during the boom days of Bend. I can also tell you that there was very little cost involved, because we basically spent maybe an hour discussing and chose. I don't believe we heard one appeal, because they didn't have broad citywide effect. And yet they were charged quite a bit of money, those appellants. So in your data, I would like to know how much is really cost recovery and how much is subsidizing the rest of the planning department, mostly long-term planners, because there's no revenue that comes in to support the long-term planning piece of the department. The short-term planning, yeah, it does. So as you're getting this data, because I know there probably wasn't much cost involved when it came to the Bend City Council, and there were tons of appeals. So I don't know where the money went, but I, having been involved with the budgeting process for that city, I know a lot of it was to subsidize long-term planning. So when you get the data, it'd be nice to know how much really is fee recovery and how much is just subsidizing the planning department in general.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, cities and counties are bound that their appeals fees are no greater than the average or actual costs. So, and there is, they do go through a formulaic equation annually to determine those fees. In my subsidization discussion, I was not trying to suggest, if you will, that appeals fees are high because they are subsidizing general fund activities. Frankly, it has been very historically for a very long time the other way around, in which the general fund has subsidized the fees that we've seen in the schedules.
If I may.
Please. Thank you.
And I'm well aware of that. I was the finance chair of the city. But I find it very eye-opening that on this table that Mr. Manton provided us with just the counties. Of our 36 counties, there's a couple on here that have not reported back, but 20 or so are less than $1,000. And then there's a handful that are up $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. There's a huge difference. There's a lot of $200 $250 fees in here. So, and these aren't counties that necessarily have their general funds able to supplement the budgets too. So I'm just finding a huge discrepancy, number one, without a justification. I just haven't heard the data for it. And then the second thing is, you know, I do recall hearing numerous people unable to appeal their case because it was so expensive. So that access issue was something else that needs to be addressed. So it's the fairness in the fee and the accessibility that is my concern. So when you're gathering data, that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Senator Morris. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I come at this from a little different perspective. In my experience, Oregon is a very friendly environment to appeal. Our land use laws are very, very friendly to those that would choose to block a development or a project, no matter where it is in the state. And I'm wondering if maybe this is an opportunity to look at an issue that that I've thought about for quite some time, and that is, if the prevailing party had the opportunity to have either cost recovery or certainly a rebate of the application fee. In this case, if it was a citizen who appealed a decision by local government and, you know, went to LUBA, that and they prevailed, then they would have a rebate of their fee by the original applicant. On the other hand, if you had the original applicant that prevailed, then the person that appeals would be responsible for paying both fees or maybe a cost recovery. Because I look at it a little differently. There's not a lot of skin in the game to stop a project in Oregon. And I can speak from many, many years of experience.
Thank you.
Just raise that as a possibility if you're looking for something that was equitable to both sides.
This reminds me of when I was chair of judiciary and got into the thicket of recovery for prevailing party. Yeah, yeah. It's a tough issue. Thank you. We have Dave Honeycutt here, and then we're going to bring Jonathan back after him.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here to
speak in opposition to this bill, not because of the general policy, because I'm very much supportive of the general policy. My folks, primarily, my members, primarily rural Oregonians, are often appealing decisions from either a county staff or a hearings officer to the locally elected officials. And so we're not excited about paying $7,000 in Jefferson County to for an appeal fee either. But on the other hand, I think there are some significant comments that the last panel made that I very much agree with. Mr. Schlack indicated that if a bill like this were to pass, you could very well see the counties that do have appeals to the locally elected officials stopping that. Right now, under current law, counties are free to choose essentially how they conduct their local land use hearings process. There's procedural standards, but some counties, you have a staff decision followed by an appeal to a hearings officer, and then possibly followed by an appeal of the hearings officer's decision to the elected officials. In other counties, you have a staff decision with an appeal to a hearings officer, with the hearings officer's decision being the final decision for the county, and from if you disagree with the hearings officer's decision, then you appeal that to LUBA. We very much appreciate the counties that continue to allow appeals to go to their locally elected officials. We think the elected officials ought to be the ones having the final say for the county on land use decisions for a couple of reasons. Number one, because they're the most responsive to the public, the people whose lives they're affecting. But number two, and more importantly, under Oregon law, if the elected officials are required or are tasked with interpreting a provision of the local comprehensive plan or zoning ordinance, that interpretation is entitled to deference at both LUBA and the Court of Appeals. On the other hand, if you have a hearings officer as the final local decision maker and the hearings officer is tasked with interpreting the local zoning ordinance or comprehensive plan, LUBA and the Court of Appeals are not entitled to defer to the hearings officer's interpretation. And in other words, they're, at that point, LUBA and the Court of Appeals have to try and figure out on their own what it is the local government meant when it adopted this particular provision of the local comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance. We very much believe that it ought to be the county that interprets their own comp plan and zoning ordinance. That won't occur if counties start abandoning appeals to their local, to the county commissioners. If that happens, then you know, that's troublesome for us. The other thing that concerns us is what Ms. Ludwig said, and I can see this happening as well. If the appeals fees if the counties and cities are forced to reduce their appellate fees, then they may very well have to raise their application fees. And since most of my members are the ones that are actually applying for the particular land use, Senator Morris talked about skin in the game. That just increases the skin in the game that we have, and that obviously is of concern to us as well. So I definitely understand the intent behind this bill and very much would like to see figure out a way for to reduce appeals fees to the point where the county is simply and the cities are simply recouping the cost to process the appeal. But I have some real concerns with the impacts of this bill, the unintended consequences of this bill if the bill was to pass.
Thank you for making those points. I'd like to keep you involved in the process because you've had a lot of on-the-ground experience.
Certainly.
Are they? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Jonathan, you're back. Now that we've had a chance to look at these numbers, Jonathan, what do they mean?
Again, for the committee, thank you for having me back. My name is Jonathan Manton with Central Oregon Land Watch, and I'll try to be brief. Thank you so much for having taken this much time to discuss this really important issue today. So what I did with the numbers that you have before you is I directly called each planning department, each county in the state, and the question I asked them was about their appeal fees, and I asked them to explain to me the process that they use, and then the question that I asked was, when you are appealing from either a planning commission or a hearings officer to the full board of county commissioners for land use decisions, what is your fee to get to that level?
Okay, so let's take Jefferson County. Is that the fee for one particular project, or is that a standard fee, that $7,425?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as it was told to me, that's a standard fee for all of the applications that come to that, land use applications that come to the full board. And that's the way that the, and again, these are verbal conversations that I had with folks, so I certainly don't want to rule out that there could have been some miscommunication there. I would love to see the numbers that the counties provide as on an official basis, but my conversations were revealing a standard fee, not for different applications, not trying to choose the highest one that they may choose, but for the fees that go to the full board of county commissioners, or in many cases in Eastern Oregon, it's a county court instead of commissioners. But yeah, that level was a standard number given to me, as I understood it, and that's what I was going after.
Okay. Senator Telfer, you have expressed, did you get your question?
I did. Thank you very much.
Okay.
If I may, just real quick, there's one final point. Like, I want to just make the larger context. Like, over in the House, we're having a lot of the conversations that Senator Morse was kind enough to bring up here. And in some of those hearings, what we're hearing is that, you know, if we're going to have a conversation about what to do at LUBA with standing and with attorney fee provisions, that one of the reasons that those should be done in some, you know, in the minds of some, is that we have such a good local process that everyone can participate locally. So we need to restrict who's available at LUVA because everyone gets to participate locally. But what's actually happening on the ground, as these numbers show, regardless of how you feel about what should be done at LUBA, is that there's access problems locally in some particular places. It's not every single county. It's not every single city, obviously. There's a handful of places where they're using these exorbitant fees and access is being limited.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. That's all we have signed up. Anybody else want to?
We do have another.
Okay. You could make your comments as brief as possible. This has been a great discussion, but we're running out of time.
Yes, Madam Chair. My apologies for coming in late. I drove down quickly from Wilsonville. My name is Cameron LaFollette. I'm the Land Use Director for the Oregon Coast Alliance. We work on land use issues all up and down the coast, from Astoria to Brookings. And I was particularly interested in this bill and wanted to have a chance to say something if I had the opportunity because of an experience that we recently had in the city of Brookings. We work with neighbors and concerned citizens in various communities who contact us if there's a development that they are concerned about. And we were working with neighbors and people in the area, in the Brookings area, concerning a large subdivision proposal, which had a hearing before the Planning Commission, at which we presented testimony, as did some other people. The Planning Commission approved it, and we were planning to appeal it to the City Council. The City of Brookings' appeal fee has always been $250 as a flat fee, but I thought it prudent, just because things changed, to check their master fee schedule, and they had changed their fee schedule in 2009. So for this particular kind of appeal, the appeal fee was $7,128. And we didn't appeal because we couldn't afford to, and the neighbors couldn't afford to. So the problem in this particular case was, or is, that for all intents and purposes, access to the not only the judicial system, because we would not have been able to go to LUBA had it been indicated without review by the City Council, but access even to the local officials was cut off. For all intents and purposes, there is one hearing available and one hearing only, which is at the Planning Commission level. The Planning Commission is really important. It's citizen volunteers who are drawn from the community, who have a variety of interests and work to represent their community's interests and needs. But it's also important, especially in controversial issues, that the elected officials, as Mr. Honeycutt said, also have a chance to participate. And that's not happening. In the city of Brookings in particular, and I don't know about other cities or counties, their master fee schedule is now based on applicant fees. So what the applicant pays is what the appellant pays. That sounds appropriate and fair on the surface, but in fact it isn't, because developers, especially for larger projects, have a great deal of money at the outset, or at least some, because you know they have loans and they're going to make a large development and hopefully make a great deal of money as a result. Neighbors and nonprofits do not have that kind of money. So it felt to us like there's not only is there an access problem here, I felt like I was kind of living the other end of some other situations in American history, like the poll tax, where theoretically you can vote if you have the money. So theoretically we could have appealed to the city council if we had the money. And I think there's a real policy issue here for people who are trying to better their communities and enter into a public policy debate about this and who aren't able to do it. Appeal fees, there's a balance between, I think, between appeal fees that cover all costs, including staff time, since staff are otherwise paid, and appeal fees that preserve public access. And I urge the committee to be thinking about that balance, because that's a policy decision that you have the joy of making.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you don't have, if you strike out at the Planning Commission level, you don't have the option to skip the elected official if that's their process, right? You don't have the option to go straight to LUBA.
No. That varies by jurisdiction. Some jurisdictions, for example, Douglas County, the county commissioners will elect not to hear something that has been decided upon by the Planning Commission and let it go straight to LUBA. That's their discretion. But that's really jurisdiction by jurisdiction, whether or not the elected officials will decide not to hear something after it's been heard by the Planning Commission and let interested parties go straight to LUBA.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 452. And we're going to take a brief break from our we're going to delay our hearing on Senate Bill 302 at risk of holding it over, and so that we can finish our work session on these two bills that we have. So we're going to start by opening a work session on Senate Bill 297. Dr. Warner.
Madam Chair, the Senate Bill 297, as you recall, is the biennial revisor's bill that changes tax law language, make sure it conforms with existing statute. It is produced during the interim by Legislative Council. So the bill is designed to have no policy implications, merely technical changes. It has no revenue or no fiscal impact, and you do have the statements for those now. So the paperwork is ready.
Okay, and committee, I just had this held over just so people have a chance to take a more extended look at it. I've heard no problems with it. So, Senator Morris, I would welcome a motion.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 297 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 297 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Morris, would you carry this?
Oh, as long as no one asks me any questions.
Originally, Senator Courtney was in line to carry this, Senator Morris, but he got himself off the hook by coming in testifying on our kicker.
Okay, well, good for you.
So it's for a good cause. All right. Now we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 19.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Senate Bill 19, we heard it on February 9th, And today, well, we tried to hear it a couple of days ago. The amendments were not ready. Today we have the dash one amendment in front of you. These amendments primarily expand the language in the bill from about 7 sections to 13 sections. And in a way, it goes with the different specifications here for the 11Q bonds. One of the things that you would find in page 4, section 8, that the on line 17, that the amendment actually specifies the bill, the bond authorization, and this is a movement from the COPs to the 11Qs. Bond types. So, and those totals are specified in the following pages, where you have the changes that are stipulated in the different authorization amounts. And perhaps because of all these authorization amounts, you also would have in the page 10 also a reduction. About $3 million on the 11G being also moved to the 11Q.
Wait, show me where that is again.
That is on page 10 of the dash 1 amendment on line 10 as well.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Now, all of these changes in the authorization of the bonding types, I think, is probably what kind of gave our fiscal office time to not be able to produce a fiscal impact statement on this yet. So, and of course, we would have to wait for the fiscal impact statement to see how the reduction in debt service payments would be because of that change of the interest rate between the 11Qs and the COPs. So one of these offices would have to show those.
Okay, but it's likely that the fiscal, when it comes, will be positive.
The fiscal might be positive for different issue. What I could imagine is this would be more of an increase in revenue, in the sense of it's a reduction in payments, and so it's a reduction in debt service payments, which is a higher amount of money that is still in our hands or in your hands to allocate somewhere else.
Okay, we have folks from the Treasurer's office. You want to say anything on this, or are you happy with Mazen's explanation?
Actually, okay. Madam Chair, if they actually would like to they talk a little more about, because we've just seen this, there's a few things on the way that it works in page 3, and that's the way how it works with the change from the IRS exemption from the interest and earnings and so on. These are not necessarily completely clear at this point, so they could probably come and explain it to us, as you would see in the page 3 and number 2 and number 4. That would be a great service to.
Okay, why don't you come up? We just have about three minutes. Can you do it in 3 minutes, Michael? And then we'll decide if we want to just hold it over because we don't have the fiscal, or whether we want to put it in the bill today. Welcome.
For the record, Senator Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mike Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer, and I am simply here to introduce Cynthia Burns from the Department of Justice and Jack Kenny from DAS, who will answer your questions.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Cynthia Burns from the Attorney General's Office. I think Mazen was talking about some of the new language in the bill that talks about agencies, in addition to taking action to protect the tax-exempt status, would have to take an action to protect any federal subsidy. And that is actually language that you'll start to see in other bills, because it used to be that the only federal tax advantage for municipal bonds was a deduction from taxable income, but now we have BABs and other types of federal subsidies that came as part of this federal stimulus packages. So that's what this language is intended to address, is that it protects not only tax-exempt status, but if you get some other type of federal tax benefit, which for the BABs is a subsidy payment from the federal government, that you have to do whatever is necessary to protect that. So we're actually putting that in other bills too as they come along.
For the record, ma'am, BABs.
BABs. Oh, sorry, Build America Bonds.
Thank you.
Okay. Nathan, do you have any other questions?
No, I think that answers unclear sections to, or unfamiliar sections to me in the
This is a little dense. So I think we are going to hang on to this just in case committee members have, because we really don't gain anything by putting it in today, do we? Yes, I will not forget to do that. Thank you for the explanation, and I will. We're going to carry over Senate Bill 19 to Friday's meeting and close the work session. And in light of our declining time, we are going to hold over Senate Bill 302 to Friday's meeting, and my apologies to Representative Buckley's representative. So is there any other business in the committee? Okay, we are adjourned.